Thank you for coming out on a Saturday. I'm going to talk about the political influence of Christianity in this country. And I want to start by going back a few years. In an interview with Geraldine Doogue on Compass in October 2004, John Howard said that he regrets, quote, that he regards the Judeo-Christian tradition as the single greatest influence for good in the Australian community, unquote. And that he has, quote, a very strong belief in the stabilising influence of the Judeo-Christian ethic in this country. Now, while he made similar statements on a number of occasions, I don't think Howard ever outlined his own beliefs and theological framework as clearly as Kevin Rudd has done over the last few years. In 2006, at the National Forum on Australians' Christian Heritage, largely repeating a speech that he gave the year before at New College in Sydney and which was broadcast on the ABC, Kevin Rudd spoke about Christianity's, quote, profound and positive impact on what we call Western civilization. About Australia, he said, and this is a quote from his speech, "My view is that the churches overall have been a significant force for good in the shaping of the Australian nation during the two centuries of European settlement." And then he goes on to list both the failings and the positive contributions of churches to Australian society. Then he says, "The churches, therefore, should cease apologising for the contributions they have made to Australia's national life. And as a consequence, the churches should continue to have confidence to engage in the great public and political debates of our time, rather than feeling that they are no longer qualified to do so. The church should always feel free to provide informed criticism of the government of the day, however unwelcome that criticism may be." Over the last few years, the question of whether Christian influence is currently at play in the political arena and to what extent it may be influencing public policy and the positions of individual politicians has been the subject of much discussion, writing and heated debate. It's been fuelled by such things as Howard's social conservatism, his secret meetings with the Exclusive Brethren, Tony Abbott's muscular Catholicism, media attention on the parliamentary prayer breakfast, the excited participation by parliamentarians of all hues in Hillsong events, the engagement of politicians with Australia's Christian Heritage Movement, which fronts a more aggressive campaign to claim Australia as a Christian nation, and Kevin Rudd's openness about his faith and how it influences his worldview. The prior question is, of course, which and whose Christianity are we talking about? Are there particular individuals, churches, denominations, or faith-based organisations that are having a deep impact on our political life? And if so, what is that impact? Are there other churches or groups who struggle to build any meaningful influence? If so, what makes the difference? What does it mean for the influence of religious groups that are other than Christian? What's often called mainstream church activity has a huge impact on public policy. It's difficult to imagine that the government would have divested itself of the delivery of so many welfare and community services if church-based organisations, especially the ones associated with the Uniting Catholic and Anglican Churches, weren't willing and able to pick them up. But this isn't the issue that's been central to the recent debate, although I think it is a pertinent one. Neither is the issue often considered in terms of Christian leaders and churches having a strong voice in the public forum in relation to policies that concern people who are poor, vulnerable and oppressed. So while the previous government was not happy with church leaders speaking out against the detention of asylum seekers or the erosion of workers' rights and often replied to such criticism with labels such as meddlesome priests and the uninformed, this is not where the heat of the debate lies either. For many commentators, politicians and Christian and non-Christian activists and lobbyists and advocates, the issue at the heart of the matter is about Christian influence on policy around bioethics and sexuality. For example, stem cell research, abortion, euthanasia, and same-sex unions and marriage. In the public discourse, it is most often particular positions taken on these issues which are most commonly referred to by that code phrase, Christian values. The best one-stop demonstration of this comes out of the Christian Democrats Party in New South Wales. In the lead-up to the last state election, they issued this checklist of Australian Christian values. There are a couple of values related to concern for the environment, but they do sit rather oddly in this list. So, the first thing on the checklist, and what they do is they put ticks and crosses against political parties in terms of whether they support these values or not. Yes, I'm just going to go through a couple of them with you. Okay, so the first point there is support prayers to open Parliament each day. And so you'll see a cross against the Greens, the Democrats, but then ticks against Labor, Liberal, National and the Christian Democrats. The next one down is Teach Australia's Christian Heritage in Schools. And you'll see that only the Christian Democrats have a tick next to that. And then if you go through the list, you'll find other things like actively support unique status of marriage between a man and a woman, presumption of shared parenting following a relationship breakdown, oppose the decriminalisation of abortion, prohibit the use of embryos for stem cell research, support mandatory clean feed filtering of internet pornography, make all prostitution illegal, reduce gambling venues, all of those sorts of things. So they're the majority of that list, and there are only two that relate to the environment, numbers 19 and 20, support the promotion of renewable energy and support the greater care of God's environment. So that checklist that the Christian Democrats in New South Wales produced prior to the last New South Wales state federal election was picked up by a number of federal groups and taken into the federal arena prior to the last federal election. If you look at that, you get a very clear idea of what the Christian Democrats and other groups who pick this up think are the key important things that Christian people need to think about. Now, I think it's probably important at this point for me to outline just a little bit about my interest in these questions and the kinds of experiences that I bring to bear on this discussion. So, as you've heard, I'm a minister in the Uniting Church and I'm currently the director of Uniting Justice. Uniting Justice is a unit of the Assembly, the National Council of the Uniting Church. It's responsible for resourcing the church to develop positions on matters of social and ecological justice and peace, and then communicating these positions both into the church itself and into the public sphere, including the political forum. Part of this work includes advocacy and direct lobbying of politicians, both in our own right, with our Uniting Church partners, and in cooperation often with ecumenical organisations and other civil society organisations whose values and aims are consistent with our own. What I'm offering you here today is a personal reflection on the political influence of Christianity in Australia from the perspectives that I have gained through this ministry. I'm committed to the reinvigoration of the voices of so-called mainstream churches, especially, obviously, the Uniting Church, and the progressive Christian voice into the political arena. I'm going to start this reflection with a somewhat idiosyncratic and chronologically random look at some of the things that have been happening at a federal level. The 6 months or so prior to the last federal election were particularly busy and interesting in terms of the engagement between Christians, churches and federal politics. In September, the National Council of Churches, this is September last year, joined with the Australian Conservation Foundation, the Australian Council of Social Services, and the ACTU, the Council of Trade Unions, to sponsor the second National Civil Society Dialogue. Invitations went out to Christian, Muslim, Hindu and Buddhist leaders and leaders from welfare, environmental and union groups, as well as human rights experts and high-profile academics across a number of disciplines. Invitations to address the gathering went out to the Prime Minister, the opposition leader, and the leaders of the Greens and the Democrats. The aim of this ongoing dialogue, and the third one is coming up very soon in a few weeks, is to build the strength and voice of Australia's civil society. 2 years in a row, it went unreported in the media. 2 years in a row, the Prime Minister refused the invitation and did not send anyone else to represent the government. Last year, the opposition leader sent one of his shadow ministers and the leader of the Greens sent one of their senators. On the second day, we broke up our meeting to go to Parliament House to support the leaders of Indigenous communities in the Northern Territory as they held a press conference to ask for the Northern Territory emergency response legislation to be delayed so that they could be consulted. CEOs and chairs from amongst the country's largest civil society organisations formed a guard of honour to welcome and support Indigenous leaders as they entered. Only one image of this was published in Perth media, and only a couple of reports made passing mention of this support for Indigenous leaders from the Northern Territory from broader Australian society. Not one media outlet picked up the joint press release we issued on this issue. Now, I would have thought that such odd bedfellows, such as ACOS, the ACTU, the Australian Conservation Foundation, the National Federation of Australian Women, the National Council of Churches, Friends of the Earth, the Uniting Church, the National Association of Community Legal Centres, and the Federation of Ethnic Communities Councils would have piqued some interest, but apparently not. 2 days later, however, what did pique the interest of the press was Kevin Rudd and John Howard addressing via an Australian Christian Lobby webcast about 600 churches around the country, mostly Pentecostal and Baptists, with a few Uniting Churches signing up and even fewer Catholics. Howard and Rudd both took the opportunity to announce policies designed to please this constituency, and you might remember, an internet filter for every Australian family, and extra police and resources to fight internet pornography from John Howard, and the promise of a family impact statement prepared for every submission to Cabinet from Kevin Rudd. I just wonder how they're going with that. So while the questions they fielded covered industrial relations, climate change and foreign aid, their policy announcements were clearly targeted at so-called family values issues, continuing to skew the public perceptions of just exactly what are Christian values. This was reported in detail by every major Australian news outlet, radio, television and newspaper, while crikey.com wondered what all the fuss was about. The Australian Christian Lobby hit the big time with this event and the vast amount of media coverage it received. Now, I've got a clip to show you of the Channel 10 news report, but I've just realised that I'm not plugged into a sound system, so I'll just kind of skip through that slide. So I doubt that you'll be able to hear it. I'll just maybe try.
Churches across the country making a pledge which will cost taxpayers $189 million. John Howard promising to help protect children from predators on the web.
It was John Howard's big chance to make his election pitch to Australian Christians.
I acknowledge, of course, that God is neither Liberal nor Labor.
Kevin Rudd also asked to address the gathering of church leaders in Canberra.
Well, thank you very much for that very friendly Christian welcome.
Both leaders webcast to a national audience of about 100,000 Christian voters. The Prime Minister offering to safeguard families from internet predators and offensive online content with an initiative called NetAlert.
This $189 million program will ensure that Australian parents and carers have the support they need to protect their family.
Kevin Rudd using his time to talk about the pressures on working families. He says new government laws should come with family impact statements.
So we would like to do our bit in ensuring that families are properly addressed in the deliberations of the Cabinet.
Huh. So, a lot of coverage for that ACL event. It's important to remember that the Australian Christian Lobby, ACL, is a company limited by guarantee. It has a board of 5 directors, including the managing director, which determines policy positions. It's not accountable to any other Christian organisations, churches or groups. It has no members, only financial supporters who donate money. There's no charter or constitution available on its website, although a trawl around the site will leave you pretty clear about what the issues of Christian values are that it regards as most important. Its views are often reported in such a way, however, that implies that ACL represents the Christian voice or the Christian perspective. And every time church leaders participate in ACL-sponsored events, they lend weight to the claim that ACL is the Christian conduit into the corridors of Canberra and out into the media. Another Christian initiative supported by both federal leaders is the National Day of Thanksgiving, an initiative of the Australian Prayer Network supported by the Australian Christian Lobby. The website describes the vision for this day in this way. The concept of a National Day of Thanksgiving was in the hearts of many Australians for a number of years. Many people wrote to the Australian Prayer Network expressing a desire to see our nation called to prayer one day each year to acknowledge our Christian heritage and the Lordship of Jesus Christ over our nation. The Australian Prayer Network took such thoughts and dreams to other national prayer and ministry organisations and church leaders. They received overwhelming encouragement to pursue the concept. The Prime Minister and Opposition Leader both sent letters of support this year as they did last year. You won't be able to read that, but you can go to their website and have a look. But I wonder how much they know about the Australian Prayer Network, who are on about much more than just prayer. Their website is clear about the importance they place on lobbying federal parliament and presenting their views in the public forum. One of the major activities they promote is the practice of spiritual mapping. The website has a series of instructional papers entitled Spiritual Mapping for Effective Spiritual Warfare. Here's a snippet. As God's people, we possess the truth, with a capital T. We hold the real weapons to bring down strongholds. Are we working as diligently as the enemy's camp? Are we applying the blood of Jesus as we go into grocery stores, parks, hospitals or our children's schools? Are we diligently doing, in capital letters, what Scripture has taught us for the betterment of ourselves and all men? No women needed there. What they are doing when they map is to mark sites where they believe Satan has a stronghold. For example, places of worship for Mormons, Baha'i, Christian Scientists, Jehovah's Witness. Places that sell New Age goods or support the occult or sell spiritual garbage, including comic book stores and supermarkets, places owned or operated by homosexuals, abortion clinics and family planning services. And they say, quote, "You are locating and infiltrating the enemy's camp for the purposes of ultimately breaking up his works." Now, it may be that the staff of the Prime Minister and the Opposition Leader are unaware of the activities of the Australian Prayer Network when they give messages of encouragement for the National Day of Thanksgiving. It may be that they are, and I'm not sure which is more concerning. In any case, the National Day of Thanksgiving vision is quite clear about what its organisers regard as, quote, the Lordship of Christ over our nation. And so it would seem to me that if our political leaders are at all trying to build good relationships with a significant percentage of Australians who are not Christian, such endorsements may well be to their eventual disadvantage. Let me go back a few years again now. In August 2004, John Howard, the then Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson and Nicola Roxon, then Shadow Attorney General, all addressed the National Marriage Forum, which was well attended by a number of other federal and state politicians. It was an event organised by the National Marriage Coalition, which was founded in July that year by the Australian Christian Lobby, the Australian Family Association and the Fatherhood Foundation. Now, just a few minor points of interest. I'm not going to comment on these. I'm not quite sure what they mean. I'll just put them out here. Dame Elizabeth Murdoch is listed as a patron of the Australian Family Association, founded by B.A. Santa Maria, and Kim Beazley was one. The Fatherhood Foundation was founded by Warwick and Alison March, who are also the founders of the Australian Heart Ministries, both of which are listed as sponsors of the National Day of Thanksgiving. The Australian Christian Lobby regularly tithes to the Fatherhood Foundation. And according to Megan Shaw of The Age, the National Marriage Coalition is also supported by Catch the Fire Ministries. And just a little bit here on Catch the Fire Ministries. You may not have heard of it. It's based in Melbourne, but you may have. Prior to the federal election in August last year, the head, Pastor Danny Nalia, had meetings with the Prime Minister, John Howard, and the opposition leader, Peter Costello, where he prayed with both and received a word from God about who would win the next election. He was obviously later forced to explain why his prophecy failed. In a very lengthy blog, which you can get on their website, he explained that he was right in terms of God's will for the election, but that we, as a country, failed to meet the criteria. That is, the prophecy was that John Howard would be elected, quote, if the body of Christ unites in prayer and action. So he wasn't wrong. The election loss was the consequence of, quote, the disunity of the body of Christ, unquote, which resulted in Christians voting for Labor and the Greens and other parties. Okay. So back to the National Marriage Forum, where the Shadow Attorney General announced that the Labor Party would support the legislation which was going to the Parliament, which enshrines the definition of marriage as exclusively a union between a man and a woman in such a way that it could not be interpreted otherwise by the law. Now, the results of a Senate inquiry into that legislation had not been released at the time that she appeared at the National Marriage Forum. And the Federal Labor Party caucus had agreed to wait for this report before making this decision. Roxon, however, was obviously swayed by the sheer weight of numbers of submissions from fundamentalist Christian groups and individuals. One report mentions as many as 12,000 such submissions. And so, on Friday the 13th of August, just a few days later, the Senate passed into law the Marriage Amendment Bill 2004. The Australian Family Association were happy announcing on their website, Marriage We Won. These events and interactions between what is variously referred to as the Christian right, fundamentalist Christian groups and conservative Christian groups, but more frequently just as Christian, seem to get an awful lot of press, while mainstream churches struggle to have their voice heard as they advocate for peace and justice and the needs of those who are poor, oppressed and marginalised. 1 year before the National Marriage Forum, however, in the lead-up to and the immediate aftermath of the invasion of Iraq, the largest Australian churches did receive some considerable media space. And maybe it was because we all agreed on something and that in itself was newsworthy. By August 2003, the government and Alexander Downer in particular was obviously fed up with being on the receiving end of some pretty harsh and well-publicised criticism about the war on Iraq. In a public lecture, he told church leaders to stop spreading our amateurish ignorance and, quote, one-sided moral message about the invasion of Iraq, and to go back to doing what we're supposed to do, by which he meant tending to and praying with our little flocks in our decaying buildings at 9:30 on Sunday mornings and visiting them when they get sick. As far as I know, no party leader or front benchers from either side, either of the two major parties, have publicly condemned any statements or positions taken by any of the smaller Christian groups I have already mentioned. There was no criticism, for example, of those Christian leaders who had a great deal of attention for spreading another, what other people might regard also as a one-sided moral message, but maybe that time about the appeal RU486 the message suited. A particular stream of contemporary Christianity held by a very small minority of Australians appears to have made some significant inroads in our country's political life. But we should not forget that while they may have won, or they think they have won, on marriage, they did not get their way on RU486 and stem cell research, and it's unlikely that they will get their way on the removal of discriminatory legislation relating to superannuation that affects same-sex couples. Private conversations and prayers with prime ministers and opposition leaders do not necessarily translate into public policy. We also need to remember that this Christian constituency is small. There are, for example, more than twice as many Eastern Orthodox adherents in Australia as there are Pentecostal church members, and almost twice as many Buddhists. Here are the 2006 census figures. Can you read those? Okay, so that's the breakdown of the Christian on the census. Okay, 5.6 identify as non-Christian. 2.1% of those Buddhists. 2.1% of Australians identify as Buddhists. Now, as a proportion of population, Christianity fell from 71% in 1996 to 64% in 2006, but non-Christian faiths rose in that same period from 3.5% to 5.6%. Okay, Pentecostalism is the fastest growing religious tradition in Australia. It had a 26% increase between those two census dates, but still a total of only 220,000 people in countrywide. The fastest growing non-Christian religion is Hinduism, which more than doubled, and there are now 150,000 Hindu adherents in Australia. And Buddhism doubled in that period, to see 420,000 adherents. Okay. So, while it's still early days, and certainly in terms of the new government, I believe that the engagement between political leaders and Christian leaders who represent a broader set of Christian values around such things as hospitality to the stranger, peace among enemies, and human rights for all people is already improving. It will be interesting to see how much media attention will continue to be paid to the so-called Christian values lobby groups. There's no doubt that these groups are noisy, well-funded and increasingly well-connected, but I don't believe they signal a full-on US-style political assault by the religious right. But there is something that does concern me deeply about the possible effects on Australia's social fabric should these groups continue to gain influence in the political sphere and have their message spruiked for free by the press. Let me give you an example of one of the most insidious campaigns, which I hope should serve as an excellent motivation to do all we can to offer a different Christian voice. The recent campaign by New South Wales parliamentarian Fred Nile and the Christian Democratic Party to end what they call Muslim immigration provided some political oxygen to some very nasty campaigns, most recently one run by some Camden residents wanting to stop the building of an Islamic school in their town. And you may remember that story. One of the protests was putting a pig's head on the ground where the school was going to be built. Now, at a public meeting of 1,000 people, Fred Nile made a passionate speech in which he told people that, quote, some Muslim schools overseas have produced terrorists, unquote. Islam opposed Christianity, the Quran condemned Christmas, and that if we didn't address these issues, we'd end up with, quote, massive social problems, unquote. At least the ABC did report the Uniting Church president, Gregor Henderson, challenging Fred Nile's stance. So, Australia needs to hear a different Christian voice in the public forum. One that believes that God calls us to participate in the work of reconciliation in the world. One that understands that the most radical and demanding command of Jesus was to love your enemy. One that understands that we are called to love without discrimination, wage peace, and offer power to the least in our world. It is time to hear the voice of Christianity that is true to the biblical vision and gospel, true to the person and being of Jesus Christ, and true to the fullest experiences of our humanity, speaking as a source of great hope in our society, reminding us that we are capable of something better, and that if we work together, those of us of all faiths and no faith, we can build a world where nature is respected and humanity flourishes in dignity and in hope. Thank you.